Well, hello there, football fans, and welcome to the Euro 2016 edition of the Soccer Central podcast. The tournament is about to start for real. There's two tournaments within a tournament. You see the knockout phase and the group phase. Different teams, different football, hopefully more goals, more drama perhaps. Let's hope so. We're going to find out. But listen, it has been a wonderful tournament so far. Yeah, the play hasn't been amazing, but I think there's been enough drama, enough great goals. I have thoroughly enjoyed it. I'm James Sharman. Beside me is Brendan Dunlop and John Molinaro. Hey, boys. I'm sorry. I'm a little bit rusty
right
now.
You forgot my name for a minute.
No, I didn't actually. I just got hung up on that word.
It's a difficult
beside
word.
Beside me.
Yeah.
It's a tough one.
Tricky one.
You boys enjoying the tournament? I'm assuming you are.
No, it's been dreadful.
Yeah.
No, yeah, of course. Yeah, it's been fun to watch. Entertaining games.
Even yesterday's infamous Italy loss.
Infamous.
It sets back the program years, I think.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I kind of said something
on... That's in his voice.
No,
there.
No, I just kind of said something on Twitter yesterday about I'm sure the Italian media is not going to, like, they're going to act responsibly and see this in the proper context. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm sure they're...
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah, because they're generally level-headed, right?
Yes, exactly. But well, even like... I'm not to go on too much of a rant, but people are acting like this is like a miracle on ice upset or something like this. Like,
no.
Let's put it in the proper context.
But to go back to the media reference, with all three British teams in Ireland going through, they've saved the newspaper business for at least 5 years.
That's true.
For sure. Absolutely. Now, while JMO's struggled to get over that loss, you'd be, as a fan of Portugal, I probably have the least enjoyable group phase, I would imagine, out of the teams advancing.
The emotional roller coaster that all three matches have been was... You know, capped by the most insane match I think I've ever watched at a major tournament. With a team that you didn't expect to even be at that tournament, to let alone hang in the competition, to not only win the group by keeping you level, but then to flip over and see that Iceland could completely change your fortune, which I thought was the path that everyone wanted to see Portugal versus England, to now realize, well, Croatia are absolutely terrifying. If you get through that, the path looks pretty good.
Yeah, absolutely. What I've noticed, though, from watching the first round of games is it's clearly much more fun watching the games at home here than actually being over in France.
Yeah,
I mean, that looks a miserable experience. Mm-hmm. So we're going to bring in a guy that's been experiencing it, and I do feel for him. His posts on Facebook and Twitter just, I think, validate the fact that it's way more fun watching games at home. No atmosphere, no party atmosphere, and crap games. Thomas Dobby from Paris joins us. He is alive. He made it through. He's leaving tomorrow back home. Most of us thought he'd be dead by now, but he's not. Tom, congratulations on being alive.
Thanks, Sharms. I still got one night, so, you know, just we'll wait to see if I make it home and make it to work on Monday. But so far, nothing stolen, nothing lost, no fights. I'm
wow.
Good.
That is shocking.
No fights?
It's been pretty good. Yeah, I haven't even seen a fight. That's a lie. I saw a couple fights in the fan zone. Never mind.
Really? Well, Scotty Burnsome on Twitter asks, how many ultras did Dobby fight? But I guess the answer there is zero.
See, this perception that I'm like a hard man or something, I'm actually a wuss. Like, I would be terrified. I'd run the other way if I saw it. I have no interest whatsoever. So.
But was there ever a night where you were like doing shots in the bar with the Croatian ultras? Because that I could see. I could see them welcoming you into their party in, you know, complete peace.
You know what? I've been surrounded by Irish and Northern Irish most of the time I've been here for some reason. I just happen to be in places where they were playing all the time, and a lot of that, a lot of Polish as well in Marseille because I went for Poland, Ukraine. So a good mix, but the Northern Irish and the Irish have traveled amazingly well, as I'm sure you guys can see on TV, and the fact that they both got through and are both going to be playing knockout round matches is, you know, those are going to be the parties to be at for sure.
They always do. The Irish fans always do it right. They understand how to support their team. And sadly, the minority of fans in certain other countries don't know how to. But can you paint the picture, Tom? I mean, you've written some great things on sportsnet.ca, but paint the picture of what you've experienced away from the field, just the whole fan atmosphere at Euro. I mean, away from the violence, the actual good side of things.
Yeah, honestly, like I said, I haven't seen anything of the trouble. I wasn't in Marseille for Russia and England, so that's a good thing. But, you know, from all I've seen, it's just been a party atmosphere with everyone getting along and even teams playing each other. I mean, it's been just a great look at how, frankly, the world should be. I mean, people just getting along regardless of the team they're supporting and just having a good time. Everyone's here on vacation celebrating, and, you know, I just think that it really it really shows how people should act to one another, even though they're on opposing teams.
Now, in the stadiums, you've been around the world. You've watched, football club level, international level. You know what a good atmosphere is inside a ground. What is it like inside those grounds at Euro?
Oh, just the level of noise. And, it's interesting because they separate the fans on the two sides. There's, an end for each. But then the rest of it is mixed. And I've been in the mixed zone of fans for four of the five games. And it really is great because you kind of see it both sides. You see the one end going, the other end going, and, how they rival each other with one gets loud and the other tries to match it or whistles it out. But again, I'm surprised how joyous it's been among the fans. All five games I've been to, even though, it was England, Wales, and one was Poland, Ukraine, with, fans that you would think would naturally be rivals. It's been a joyous, but just loud and rocking. People just enjoying the occasion for what it is, which I think, says it all. It's been a great tournament. I've been lucky to see some really good games, and just the vibes and the energy in there, it's second to none for sure.
And the highlight for you so far, I'm assuming it's going to be the Daniel Sturridge goal late in injury time.
Yeah, I took a four-hour double train ride all the way from Lyon to Lens, just kind of with how my accommodations were lined up, and had a the night before that game, France played Albania, and we were out at just a local bar in Lyon with a bunch of French fans, and that was probably the highlight that night. Just seeing people in the streets, the French fans just loving their lives, and then surrounded by Northern Ireland fans as well. Just the street packed until 4 a.m., people just celebrating basically like they'd won the tournament, even though it was Albania. I can't even imagine how it's going to be going forward. So barely slept a wink that night and got on a train for Lens at about 9 a.m. And I was exhausted, but Daniel Sturridge, that goal made it worthwhile, that's for sure.
Tom, before the tournament, there was a lot of, I don't know if I want to say fear, but there was just a lot of concern about, security, and this in the aftermath of the attacks back in November. Do you get a sense of how much, if at all, this sort of tournament has kind of, brought the French together?
Yeah, it really has. I mean, the French people, you can see the pride and the joy of hosting the tournament. I think you see it everywhere, especially when France are playing. But the security in general, it's been, I think I wrote it in that piece, but I think it's been the perfect amount of presence. I mean, you feel safe, you feel comfortable going into the stadiums, but at the same time, you don't feel like it's overdone or that you're, having to wait extra long or that you're always surrounded by it and it makes you more scared or terrified of anything. So I think it's been actually a really good balance. Every game I've pretty much, you get there, you go through two checks and you're into the stadium. I think it's been about half an hour on average. The England Wales was a bit of a bottleneck at the gate I was in. I was starting to get nervous. It was about 2:30 for a 3 o'clock kickoff and I was in a bottleneck to get in. I thought, this could be dicey, but got past it. And yeah, I think it's been a good blend of enough and there and present, but you don't notice it constantly and it's not a negative factor on the tournament.
Speaking of bottlenecks, there was a report in the tournament earlier that one fan smuggled a 7-inch flare up his anus. I don't know if you heard this one or not.
I did hear
it. First question, was it you? And secondly, did you see any flares being smuggled in any orifices?
First of all, it was not me. No, I don't think I had that many beers. And second of all, at the Poland fans had a couple in both ends against Ukraine somehow. I don't know how they get them in.
I think we do know.
I guess we do. Yeah, that's the way. So maybe Dunlop can tell you more about it. I don't know.
How do you spin that towards me, you jerk?
I don't know.
If we start seeing a lot more flares at TFC games, we know people listen to this podcast.
Yeah.
I really hope not.
So Tom,
although the Canada game, I guess, who was it against? I forget. The one they won 3-0, was it against?
When who won 3-0?
When Canada won in the World Cup qualifier last time, I forget.
Was it Cuba?
I don't think 3-0 has ever happened.
Or whatever. It was, there was flares in the Canadian end there.
Mm-hmm.
During that game, I remember my shirt stinking, so they somehow got it in.
Yeah, and some people couldn't sit down for some reason during that match as well. On their feet the entire time, and it wasn't because of the football, that's for sure.
Yeah.
You can't buy TFC branded seating donuts, I guess, in the stores there. Anyway, moving on. I'm going to ask you quickly here. From what you've seen so far, you know, some teams have really, you know, stood up and said, "Listen, we are a contender." Some have said we're a dark horse. Some have been a great fairy tale. What's been the story for you so far at Euro?
Honestly, I think the story is that how the sides have broken down with the draw. And I mean, what half you're on. And I think, you know, as a biased England fan, I'm just devastated that they weren't able to hold on against Russia or beat Slovakia. Because when you look at that side, it actually looks like a side of the draw that a team like England with, you know, a couple of good breaks here and there could potentially have made a final. And I think it sets up for Croatia and Belgium potentially in a quarterfinal. I think whoever wins that game, if they can both get there, are going to make a final. And, you know, it's not that difficult to pass. Belgium doesn't have the experience yet in these big tournaments to say that they're definitely that strong a team. Croatia's look great, but if I'm any other team, I'm thinking, if I'm on that side, I have a real chance, even a team like Wales or someone like that, to actually make a final. Whereas now with all three of the big boys, I think you would say Spain, France, and Germany, plus England, Italy, and Portugal all on one side of that draw. It's just, it's an absolute gauntlet, and somebody's going to get through. But I mean, for a team like England, you sit there and think, what a missed opportunity and what a chance they had to potentially go very far in a tournament. Now I can't see them getting by France. So, you know, that's the story for me, is that with Spain losing that game to Croatia against basically a team with a few different reserves, to lose that game and throw the tournament in disarray, I think is what stands out.
Yeah, I agree. Well, listen, Tom, you got one more night. I'll say play safe, but we know you won't. But we'll see you when you get back. Glad you've enjoyed it, and thanks for doing this.
Yeah, no problem. Have a good one, guys. We'll see you soon.
That is Thomas Dobby. Check out sportsnet.ca. He wrote a great piece about his experiences at Euro so far. But, boys, let's talk about the bracket and the format a little bit here. Now, it's been, you know, criticized in many quarters about how could this happen. But really, if you look at it, only a few strange results have resulted in this bracket being as weighted as it is. Now, listen, 24 teams is just, as I use the word, clunky. Regardless, right? It's a strange format. There's no other options right now, sadly. But as much as I really want to attack UEFA, and I think I can in many regards, with regard to, you know, this weighted bracket now, it's really because certain teams lost some games they probably shouldn't have lost, or drew some games they shouldn't have lost,
mm-hmm.
or drew.
I have no problem with the weighted bracket. In fact, I think it's completely confusing for fans, and so rare to see, you know, Italy have confirmed that they'd won the group. After two matches, we're just not used to considering head-to-head as your ultimate tiebreaker, and it kind of takes a bit of the mystery away from match day three, at least so I thought. And then match day three played out, and it was, you know, such a roll of the dice, and now you see how lopsided the bracket is, as Dobby illustrated there. I can see why you'd be quite frustrated if you're a fan of the bigger powers and the perennial favorites for this tournament, but if you're just a fan of football, you're looking for entertainment, you're going to get it on both sides, regardless of how, you know, big name they are on the one side.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with how the bracket kind of played out. It's just, as you said, I think just certain results went away, and that's the way it played out. What I do have an issue with, and I don't think enough people are talking about this, is why didn't Group E and the Group F winners have a shot at a third place game? Why was it predetermined that Group A and through D were only allotted potential Group 3 matchups? My solution would be to, like, they're already using tiebreakers. Mm-hmm. To determine the four best third place teams, why not use those same set of tiebreakers to determine the four best group winners, and then, you know, wait until it all plays out and then determine the matchups from there? Why does Group F and Group E not get a potential third place matchup just because of, you know, lettering, basically?
Right, precisely. Yeah, it's definitely an imperfect format, that's for sure.
I understand logistically it might be hard because, you know, there's team travel and there's fan travel, and, you know, you might not necessarily want to wait until the last day to determine all the matchups, but, like, we're determining a European champion here. It seems pretty ludicrous that, you know, as I said, you're kind of using this criteria to determine, you know, the four best third place teams. Why not use that exact same format to determine the four best group winners?
Sorry, go ahead.
When they came up with this, it was just, hey, if we allow 24 teams, then we're going to make way more money. Oh, how do we do it as far as the bracket is concerned?
We're going to squeeze it in there
figure
somehow.
That out.
Yeah, no, precisely.
Don't worry, it will come together.
Yeah. No, that's precisely what it is, right? I mean, this is not the perfect situation, 24 teams. Now, that being said, I mean, given how certain small teams have advanced, in fairness, a lot of them playing some pretty negative soccer. Does it validate 24 teams and, you know, opening it up? I mean, is the depth there in Europe to have a 24 team? I mean, the evidence would suggest that, yes, that is the case, because the likes of Hungary, who are supposed to be the worst team at Euro, have actually played some of the most attractive football, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's tricky to put it down to, because if you look at the facts, it's the second lowest goals per match ratio at the Euro since 92, I think. Second ever, 92 was the worst. So you look at it from that angle and say games, I think, were a bit closer or a bit more low scoring than we might have anticipated. But I can't say that I've thought teams looked like they didn't deserve to be there, like teams were being played off the pitch. I mean, with the exception of Russia and Ukraine, who actually looked like they were inferior, I think there was a ton of teams we expected to look like that, completely surprise us, and the games have been really entertaining.
Yeah, I don't think the tournament has been watered down by the straight teams. Right. I mean, I think that was the great fear, right? I mean, who knows? I mean, maybe there's going to be a whole series of blowouts now, but I highly doubt it. The only thing I would suggest is it's kind of, I don't know, you know, teams getting through on like 3 points.
Yeah.
It seems a bit, I don't know.
Anyone in particular that you're targeting?
Well, Northern Ireland. One win.
Yeah.
Well, at least you got a win, unlike other teams you can
mention.
Well,
and 3 draws for Portugal, sure. But I mean, I don't, you know, is that, does one performance merit inclusion due to the knockout round?
That's one win and it gets in a game against Wales. Whereas Italy, one of the performers in the first round of games, in my opinion, gets Spain.
Well,
right, which again brings up big issues about the format, right?
Right.
There seems to be a real disparity there somewhere. But overall, I mean, listen, there's, like I said, fewer goals than in previous tournaments, but the quality of the goals has been outstanding, isn't it? Really good. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not sure if anyone's quite beaten Payet's in the first day. Modric came close, yeah, very close. And Ronaldo's yesterday
was pretty spectacular.
It's a good debate, right? I mean, these are sensational goals. And late goals too, which I think really adds. Had it not been for the late goals, I think the whole narrative may have been very different about how we've seen this tournament so far.
Yeah, well, I've completely lost count. I think if matches were only 80 minutes, we wouldn't have a quarter of a goal a game.
Yeah, that's a good point. What is it after 86 minutes? I forget how many they are, but it's
a phenomenal line.
Yeah, it really is.
There hasn't been too many club type goals. I did the Belgium pack the other night, and Lukaku had the first goal. I forget who had swung it in from the side. And it just looked like an Everton goal to me. He had some time. He just kind of settled. It wasn't a pretty goal. It was just very clinical. But there haven't been any of those at all. And then Ronaldo's header seemed like a Real Madrid goal to me as well.
Something very much so.
Funny in watching it where you just, I think in club football, you see certain balls swung in and you see movement and you think the goal's coming here, where I haven't felt that predictability as much in this tournament.
There's been no predictability because on so many occasions you've seen these teams sitting deep, 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 defend, mm-hmm. then boom, catch them on a break and score a goal.
Yeah.
You know, and get a point.
Iceland's final prime example. I could not believe it played out that way. The Portugal match had just ended yesterday and I was
quite miserable thinking, England, Portugal again. I've been down this road before. It doesn't end well. I was really concerned, even though Portugal have been far from impressive. Mm-hmm. I was concerned then, boom, within, you know, a second of that game finishing, the Portugal game, Iceland score, England-Iceland, I'm thinking, well, that's much better. And then I think, wait a minute, but Iceland sit deep, and England can't break down deep teams. They just can't do it. They've shown that throughout the tournament so far. So I don't know what to think anymore.
What's the newspaper headline on match day?
Iceland v. England.
Sons of Anarchy.
Sons of Anarchy? It's
every player on Iceland.
Son. That's
the last
pretty good.
Son.
I like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And no one has any expectations in England. They expect the worst. So
there's a great.
There you go. Free newspaper
there's
headline.
There's a great Twitter feed. Have you followed this? Reykjavik Grapevine? It's brilliant.
No.
It's obviously an Icelandic based, I think, newspaper or magazine. And they put out these incredibly hyperbolic tweets about their team. And it's just like, you know, Iceland shall not smite the. I'll find some for you because they're really very well done.
Okay. Iceland's quite the popular travel destination. Have either of you known people in the last couple of years to go?
Lots.
Because it's
so
a considerable
cheap
number.
Yeah. It's so cheap to get there.
Yeah.
I might do it myself, actually, because they're dirt cheap airfares. And then when you get there, it's pricey. But apparently a fascinating country. And Reykjavik's a great, great city from what I hear.
That's great music festival
there every year.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What bands go? Flow in the Machine?
No, actually, it's funny you mention that. I'm pretty sure my buddy went there last year or year before and saw Flow in the Machine there.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. keep talking. Reykjavik. I'm going to find some
It was, how do you spell Reykjavik?
There's a few J's in there.
R-E-Y, I think, isn't it? Oh, there we go. When Reykjavik Grapevine. Okay, here we go. So some of their tweets. Smiting the English is also just called the old days in Iceland. Perhaps England will reconsider this Brexit idea when they realize they, Iceland, longships are coming and call for allies. We were going to recount a few Iceland Viking sackings of England, but there are just so many. Where to begin? It's really good stuff. Anyway, I definitely recommend you follow it if you can spell Reykjavik. Good for you.
One of those
actually at RVK Grapevine. That's their Twitter handle.
Because they realize no one can spell Reykjavik. That's why.
Yeah, precisely. Probably, yeah. Who stood out for you from a player standpoint so far? Obviously, great performances so far. Gareth Bale, 3 goals in 3 games. I thought Iniesta was brilliant up until the last game. Who stood out for you as a guy that's maybe, you know, en route to being the golden ball winner?
Golden ball winner. Well, I was going to say, I was thinking of players who stood out to me who's either names I only knew or names maybe I didn't even know.
Right.
Michael McGovern. Stopping shots.
What a performance.
With the six arrows. I mean, he's been fantastic. And he's actually, I saw a few best 11s and he was picked as the number one keeper.
Really?
And obviously, he hardly given up, but I wonder if it was simply from that shot alone. As he took it right in the sensitive area.
I know, right there.
And stood right back up.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was quite impressive.
I guess the usual suspects. Like, I've been really impressed with Dimitri Payet. I think he was consistent all 3 games. Iniesta, even Perisic of Croatia.
Yep.
I think he's been outstanding.
Oh, and that last game especially.
He's on my list as well.
And Modric too, up until obviously injured last game. Yeah. But, he stood out as well.
Alvaro Morata as well, because I think he has 3 goals. And Gareth Bale obviously is, I think, you know, been key for Wales.
Croatia and Perisic, obviously they're terrifying. And as soon as that match had ended, I said, you know, God help whoever gets them. Now I have this weird sense of confidence, and it's because I'm an idiot, one. But two, Portugal play a better game against better opposition. Mm. You're not going to get much better, I think, in this tournament than Croatia right now. But their fitness levels in that last match, I know it was overemphasized in the broadcast, at least the broadcast that we saw. But you can't, like, it really is shocking to see how they increased their intensity against Spain. And Paris has just seemed fueled as the game went on. It was like he was consuming as the match played.
It was a very young team as well, right?
He looked better at the end than at the beginning.
Yeah, I know. You're right. They pushed and pushed. I think at the same time, Spain did take their foot off the gas somewhat. Yeah. I think the sub, they took the leader off for Bruno, I think, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. It was. I thought, well, at that point, okay, they're going for the draw here, which was clearly a mistake. But traditionally speaking, that's what Spain do, and they're fine with that, and it works. But Croatia refused to lie down. There's no fear in that Croatia team at all, apart from maybe in the stands where that tiny group of fans are an absolute disgrace. And frankly, you know, they're trying to get this team kicked out. I hope that for every Croatia game going forward, and there could be, 1, 2, 3, 4 more of them, quite possibly, the right police route, as it were, the last time out, because we can't see that happen again.
The stands are going to be very self-policed, and I think they were at the last match.
Which can cause violence, though, in itself, right?
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, as if the ultras need an invitation for that. But it's such a complicated and confusing setup for anyone who's
watching. Because they
think
they're fighting for the right because the Croatian FA is so corrupt.
Yeah.
But that's not how you deal with it.
No.
It just isn't as simple as that. But let's get to the positives here. Croatia have been, I think, the standout team. It was going to be Spain until that last match.
Mm-hmm.
I want to talk about Portugal, though, because I find them a fascinating team. I think I'm decided they're extremely average plus Cristiano Ronaldo.
Okay. Is that any different than when pre-tournament?
No, not really. I thought that's what they were. They're going to live and die by how he plays. I thought he played okay in the first 2 games. It was unfairly vilified by the media. Obviously not at his best, but had so many chances. But that last game, you know, when he has to stand up and be counted, he does it for his club and his country.
Mm-hmm.
And he still wasn't at his best, but he comes away with a wonderful assist, 2 goals. But the big concern is his health. And late in that game, he's grabbing his leg. Behind the knee, maybe just above the knee, maybe like a hamstring tendon or something. But that's a massive concern, obviously. I'm not sure whether that'll be enough to get past Croatia. But overall, Portugal for me have been extremely disappointing.
Well, he's such a different player now than he has been the last couple of years. I mean, he's still dynamic. He still can be explosive. But he's 31, and it's quite evident he's lost some of that elasticity, which I think is why he's having so many muscle issues as well. And he just doesn't have that exact same explosiveness for as consistent as he a time as he was able to use before. Playing in that center forward role for Portugal, a lot of times he's been left on an island. But what you saw against Hungary was, and what I think you've seen in the build-up to that Hungary match as well, is that Portugal have better ball-holding pieces than I realized. I don't think I thought very much of João Mário. I know he's been highly rated. I knew he was a skilled player. He impressed at the under-21s last year in that tournament when they lost to Sweden in the finals on penalties. But I think that Portugal as a team looked a lot better than I expected. I expected them to be quite average, and they really did impress me all around. So it's not just Ronaldo and 10 other dudes. It's Ronaldo and a few guys that are pretty decent and a few other dudes to complete a side.
They've been very familiar to me to other teams in the tournament that they have controlled the games. And they have dominated times, but haven't found that scoring touch until the last game when the defense fell apart as well. But back to Ronaldo, JMO, is he a leader? Because I'm looking at his antics out there. And, okay, you can't criticize the guy too much. Two goals and assist. He won that game for his country. I know that. But I'm thinking, as a teammate of him, remove the goals and you know, the big moments. Mm-hmm. He must be an awful player to play with. Just by his general body language and his reaction, you must be terrified to play a loose pass to him. That's not a leader to me.
I think he's a leader. I mean, yeah, I take your point about sort of body language and about throwing microphones in lakes and whatnot. But
that's great, by the way.
Yeah, it was. But yeah, I mean, look, whatever else you want to say about him, and there's a lot that can be said about him, the guy is a world-class footballer. And I think he wears his heart on his sleeve, and he's the type of player who will absolutely die for his country and club. Mm-hmm.
For sure. I mean, but that doesn't make him a leader, though.
Well, I think that's a big part of it, though, James. I really do. I mean, when you look at some of the great captains and leaders in international football, like, I think that's probably the defining character trait. I mean,
the emotion.
Yeah, I think just sort of being able to sort of let it all out there and like bleed and absolutely give it everything and be distraught over every little sort of thing that goes wrong.
Sure, but mm-hmm. I didn't see Marc Messier, you know, throwing his hands up in disgust and, you know, most awful expressions on his face when he got a loose pass or someone scored against him. He was more like, okay, guys, get on me. I'm going to rally you. Yeah. Let's push forward here.
Well, but there's different types of, like, leadership, right? I mean, I think that's just Ronaldo's way. I really do. I mean, and I take your point about Marc Messier, but he was a different type of athlete playing a different sport in a different era.
I just think, I mean, I think you need someone on that team, a big personality, aside from Ronaldo, as well as him, right?
Yeah.
Because someone's got to at some point say to him, okay, you know, you're not on your own here. You have got 10 other players here as well.
But you just explained how they're quite average players.
I know. But even the personality, you know, like a Raul Morales before, right? Now, listen, a limited player, still a very good player. I liked him a lot. But had that personality. He would stand up in that room, I'm sure. I'm not sure who else does. I mean, look at the free kick situation, right? 40 free kicks without a goal.
But
right,
you like
someone. Sorry, that's not good enough.
Honestly,
someone else. Nani's on that team. He can hit free kicks. But he can't go 0 for 40.
I trust me. I've hummed and hawed about this many a times, and I just wonder how you could bet against yourself, thinking no. I think someone else is going to take this chance and have better odds than Ronaldo when you see him do it so often for his club.
It has to some point come around. Aside. Does it?
Yeah, I think so. You can't have Paulo Guerrero taking those kicks and
it's
missing,
been years.
Skying it over the
it's
over
been
the bar.
Years.
I mean, when he missed the penalty in that match where he also had just put it over the bar, and I thought that was going to be that one free kick to which since he's taken 12 now and has completely ruined his total and made his ratio considerably worse. I thought that was going to be it, and it just wasn't his. It wasn't his day in that second match, but I do believe it's going to come against Croatia, and I don't know if I want to take that risk to let someone else take those kicks. I know 0 for 40 is horrible. He's probably going to go 0 for 50, to be honest.
I think everyone's living in the past with free kicks and Ronaldo.
They are living in the past.
It's time to say, stand up in the room, someone, and say, okay, you know, give it to me, give me a shot. Yeah. By the way, Quaresma was very good off the bench yesterday, so maybe he'll get a start.
That's why he's in the side.
Yep. Yeah, exactly.
He brings a lot to the table.
Right? He does. And Sanchez, too, looked very good when he came on. I want to see him get some more minutes, actually.
Does he look like an 80 million euro player to you guys?
He will be, for sure.
What about Carvalho? I've been very impressed with him. Like 38 and...
Ricardo? Yeah.
Sorry, yeah. Oh. I thought he's just been outstanding.
Not so much yesterday, perhaps, but up until
that
point.
No, those first two games?
Yeah, no. He's
solid.
But he wasn't embarrassed yesterday either.
No, he wasn't. But just as a group, I mean, he's going to be like the commanding presence, you think, in that back four. And as a group, Absolutely. They weren't great yesterday. But I'm with you.
He's that leader that you are fiending for, I think, in that room.
That's a great point.
That's
why not him?
One that he's there.
Yeah.
Well,
maybe it's him in the room.
Pep,
I don't know.
Pep as well. I think that when, to use your favorite word or one of your favorite words, when Cristiano becomes so petulant that you tune him out, that's why you need those other players around. And for as much of a nut as Pep can be, I think that he can command a bit more of a respectable leadership in those moments. And Carvalho obviously just is entitled to it.
I see Pep being far more vocal for Real Madrid than he is for Portugal. Don't you? Far more of a presence.
I wonder where that comes from, too.
He
hasn't annoyed you yet.
Right? He will, I'm sure, at some point. But
I'm sure he will at some point. It might have something to do with Carvalho being next to him, to be honest.
Maybe,
but
yeah,
I think
yeah.
he's always accepted that role in the Portuguese team that he's more of a team player and you know, a contributing unit as opposed to being a core and being such a vocal piece for his club. He doesn't feel the need to do that or was never given the platform to do that and never grew into it.
Italy lost yesterday in a game that meant nothing. Prior to that, I thought they'd been one of the most impressive teams at Euro as far as knowing exactly what they are. They're a team that is quintessentially Italian, which is a little bit unfair because they have played more expansive football in recent years. But that is a vintage Italian team who is going to be impenetrable, I think, in the big games with that Juventus back four. Now, they won't score many goals, but they have enough, I think, to pop one or two. I think they've been outstanding so far. J-Mo, now you watch this team closer than anyone I know. Your thoughts on them?
Yeah, I can't disagree with much of what you said, if anything. I think the key has been the back four of Buffon, Barzagli, Chiellini, and Bonucci. You know, having those guys as teammates throughout the season, I think that gives the Italian team a massive advantage at this tournament. And when you think about it, I mean, they were, what, 2-3 minutes away from posting 3 clean sheets? It's been, I think, as long as you're quite right, they're not going to score a ton of goals, but I think that defense is going to keep them in games. And, you know, at 0-0 or even if they're 1-0 down, I think they're always going to have a shot just because they're not going to give away much. I will say this. I mean, I was quite relieved that we got Spain, to be perfectly honest, because I would not want to play Croatia right now.
Huh. You prefer Spain to Croatia?
Absolutely.
Really?
Yeah. I think Croatia, for me, they were the best team of the first round. And I just look at that midfield of Modric and Rakitic and Perisic up top. I just think they've been outstanding.
Brozovic has been really good too, hasn't he?
It's just a total team. Dario Sarna too, as well. Like
he was washed up, wasn't he?
Yeah, what a great story that is, with his father passing away and then him coming back to the country and playing so well. So yeah, I mean, as crazy as it sounds, I'd much rather play Spain than I would Croatia. That said, Spain is going to be tough. It's not an easy nut to crack.
Up until that Croatia game, Spain for me was brilliant. Head and shoulders the best performers so far at Euro.
Sure. Yeah,
they look back, not to their best, and let's not try and compare them to their vintage best. Until they find a new Xavi, they won't be their vintage best. But man, they were very, very good. And moving that ball around so quickly, so well, dominating possession. Morata, we're wondering where the goal is going to come from. And he looks like he is just that typical quintessential center forward now and will look great in Real Madrid colors next year.
Fabregas, too. I mean, you know, yeah. He had to get that in. Fabregas, too, much maligned for, you know, the season at Chelsea. Fabulous in that game against Croatia. Him and David Silva teaming up quite nicely.
Silva looks fresh and healthy, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does.
He does.
He hasn't been that way all year at Man City, but man, he's been very, very good.
Fab has looked really well, played very well, but not good enough to take penalty kicks, apparently.
Very strange, eh? Ramos taking that
one.
Ego always trumps logic.
You think so? Yeah, I wonder about that.
In football? Yes.
Did Del Bosque talk about that post-match?
I didn't see enough quotes to justify it. He kind of...
Ramos did. I mean, Ramos said that he changed his mind just before he took the kick, which direction he's going in.
And we got to be said, like, the Croatian keeper was basically on a 6-yard line when he, like, that was absurd.
He took an Uber
to the...
probably
shouldn't have been a penalty to begin with, so...
Maybe it evened out.
I don't blame the referee. I mean, he saw it once, and when I first saw it, I'm like, stonewall penalty. Watched it again 18 times, and it's like, okay, it wasn't a penalty, but how the hell can the referee tell that? So, in the end, justice, I think, was served, but... Sure. I would watch out for Spain. I think that Spain-Italy game is going to be, it could be the game of the tournament.
Just
different tactics, different styles. It's going to be something special. Is that Sunday or when is that game?
It's Monday.
Oh, it's Monday. Ooh, big Monday coming up.
Yeah, because it's the same day as the England game, so it'll be massive.
How about Germany, the world champions? What do you make of their performance so far? To me, it really mirrors a lot of their World Cup performance in the group phase.
Yep.
So haven't not quite, a little bit disjointed. not horrible, not bad, but doing enough to win their group, and I'd watch out for them.
I think in a lot of ways this team looks like that World Cup team, or is that World Cup team, just a bit more tired and a bit less creative. And the German media seem to have no faith in them whatsoever. I heard someone predict that they would lose to Northern Ireland if they drew them in the draw.
Just so ridiculous. They'll be a different team in the...
They're just laying low in the weeds.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%.
They'll be fine. I mean, this is classic Germany. They just kind of, start out... Not that they've started out slow, because they haven't sort of lost a game, but they just kind of do what they have to do, and then...
They
pace
themselves, right?
Yeah, I mean, and I was the term gets overused, I think, but, like, they're masters at tournament management. They really are.
Yeah.
I think they understand historically better than any other team in the history of international football that, this is a marathon. It's not a race. And so I think this has been a classic German performance thus far in the group stage.
Yep. And they're up against Slovakia, who, with respect to Slovakia, shouldn't be too much of an issue for Germany. A defensive team, but Germany apparently can unlock deep line defenses, unlike some teams. Speaking of England. I've actually thought they've played really well in this tournament so far.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, they don't like playing defensive teams. They have difficulty unlocking those teams. There isn't that Paul Gascoigne creative midfielder right now. I think some players aren't playing to the top of their abilities. Harry Kane, Dele Alli looks a little bit tired right now. Wayne Rooney, I think, has done an okay job in the midfield.
Been.
He's been fine. They've got to find their goals. But honestly, Iceland, they should beat... at that point, they'll beat France. They'll play France, and they'll probably lose to France. But I've been fine with them. I mean, people have been so critical of England, right? It's so easy to hammer them. And they've been great, but they haven't been poor. They've been kind of what I expected.
You thought that still in the third match? Why did Roy make so many changes? And why did the changes look so poor in comparison? Because I thought that was the biggest surprise to me, was that they really looked like a team that was almost trying too hard and forgot how well they played against Wales.
I can only imagine it's down to... fatigue, and if he considers Dele Alli and Wayne Rooney a little bit tired.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if they are, but I mean, otherwise I'm with you. I would go with the same team, keep the momentum. It seemed to work once he made the Sterling switch, which was, a disastrous selection based purely on a couple of decent friendlies before the tournament.
Yeah.
I thought Lallana's looked really good.
Yes. Henderson looked horrendous.
Really bad.
Terrible.
Yep. Eric Dier has been a standout player and one of the standout players in the tournament so far for me in that specific role as well.
If only Carlos Queiroz could have nationalized him back when he was in Lisbon.
Well, isn't it strange that England's perhaps the most cultured-looking footballer grew up playing in the continent? I think it's a lot to that. I wish more English players played in Europe and other leagues.
I've read briefly the story that his mother had moved to Portugal to work Euro 2004 or something, and then they stayed there. That's the Dier to Portugal story, how he ended up growing up there. And then he got in the academy shortly thereafter, Sporting's academy, and stayed in Lisbon and made a life until Spurs brought him back.
He looks really good, that's for sure. Played well against Bale in that second match.
He did.
Obviously, Bale scored the goal. Wales have been one of the standout stories for sure. And they are what they are. They know what they are. They just, we'll defend, and then we'll catch you in the break with Gareth Bale. And Aaron Ramsey's been brilliant so far
Very good. Yeah,
Wales have really impressed me. I think they were unlucky against England. At the same time, though, I think on paper, that's exactly the result you would have expected. And Wales look even better than anyone would have thought.
To me, in that game, Wales, though, that it was heroic, brave defending.
Right.
Rather than great, organized defending. I mean, how many blocks in that game? And that was, again, England, same thing against Russia, same thing against Slovakia. So many chances, just couldn't convert their chances. So that's been a theme, I think, throughout the group phase. We'll see what happens in the knockout phase. Group A, France, the hosts, again, disjointed, at times shown real flashes. I think Pogba, after getting a bit of a wake-up call, looks a lot better now than he did in the first game, certainly, and then being dropped for the second game. Deschamps, I guess, admitting his mistakes, is rectifying them. I'm still not quite sure what their preferred 11 is. I'm assuming Giroud's back in there for the next game, right? Up front. I mean, Gignac didn't look very good.
No. Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
Gignac is a poor man's Olivier Giroud.
Yeesh.
Oof, I know.
That's scathing.
But I think that was always the case, and I think that's why he's not playing in a European club.
Yeah, you could be right.
Not to take anything away from Liga MX.
Do you still think they are a true favorite for this tournament? They're favorites before the tournament. From what you've seen so far, are they still the favorites?
I think so. I mean, kind of like Germany, they haven't sort of blown me away in this group stage. They just kind of did what they had to do. I mean, but they've looked pretty solid. I think there's enough quality and depth there that who's their second round matchup? Oh, Ireland.
Yeah.
I suspect they're going to push them aside rather easily. And
although they haven't got Thierry Henry to cheat and get a handball. To...
I think it suits up quite nicely for them.
That match is going to be electric. Yeah. And that match is not in Paris. That match is in Lyon.
Yeah, that's the one to be at. As a neutral fan, just be in that stadium. It's going to be amazing.
It'll be amazing. Fantastic. You know, Robbie Brady's only the fifth Irish player ever to score the European Championships.
Is he really?
Just don't score a lot of goals.
Love seeing Wes Houlihan get on.
I don't think that there's a person disappointed to see Ireland extend their stay at this tournament. They don't always play the most attractive football, but they
bring it, man.
So much
off
passion
the field,
and off the field, of course. What a party! If you know, Dobby's got to be disappointed to be going home now. He's gonna miss the parties just getting good for Northern Ireland and
it is.
Irish fans.
All right, let's go through some tweets before we wrap up here. Let's see here. Jack Mather asks, so how concerned should Germany be about their scoring so far? I think we discussed that. Nah, not at all.
No.
It really is two tournaments, isn't it? At World Cups and Euros. You've got the group phase where teams just set up differently, and then the knockout phase. It's just different tournaments. And I'm not sure who Germany is putting up front, though, whether they go back to Götze or go with Gomez, who looked okay, actually, in the last game. Could have scored a hat-trick, mind you.
I thought Gomez looked fine, yeah.
I'm in the pool as well, so I definitely would definitely be behind him starting more games.
Müller's got to step up, and I think you'll see this now. This is his tournament time, knockout stages. He'll be that hero and that late threat.
Rashid asks, your thoughts on Zlatan's Euro performance? Oh. We say farewell to Ibra. Oh, what could have been with a good team internationally, huh? He was pretty pedestrian, wasn't he?
Yeah, I don't think he had much service to feed off of.
It's very poor Sweden, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Who picked them again as their the flop of this year's tournament?
I don't know.
I did.
Did you?
My predictions have been pretty good so far.
Really?
Austria didn't work out so well. Oh. But most of it, well, pretty good. I mean, it could all fall apart now.
It could.
But yeah, I thought Ibra was pretty average. Then we'll just sit back and we'll see him wearing a red shirt next time, right?
Shame to see him bow out internationally that way, though. I mean, he's never had a team around him, but I honestly thought he was going to explode on match day three and just have a game. Just take every ball, take every chance, take every shot. And he didn't. I think he's frustrated. I think he's tired. And I think he should come to MLS, but that's just me.
It's 34, too. We shouldn't lose sight of that, right? So,
Michael Colmone, I don't know how you pronounce his name. He asked J-Mo, why is Conte being so stubborn about playing Insigne? Looks so good in 15 minutes.
Yeah, that is a good question. He kind of came in yesterday and I thought really enlivened the attack and, you know, hit that shot that hit the post, and if not for that, it could have changed the game. And Conte's just a stubborn guy all around. I don't think it's just with Insigne. So, he has certain ideas, and Chelsea fans will soon realize that he has certain ways of going about business, and it's hard to change his mind. He has certain beliefs, and that's just the way it is. So,
Insigne is the Quaresma of Italy for me because he's got so much flair, but there's just something about him you're like, don't really trust him on this stage. He has to earn it more than other players, I think. And
yeah, I think that's a good point.
Conte doesn't see him as that type of player to have earned it.
But he's the exactly type of player I think they need more of.
Yes. Yes, very much so.
I retweeted Philip DeMello's tweet. It's a picture of, he goes, here's Karai on a night out on the town. It's very amusing. It's very good. Gabor Karai has been the star so far at this year's tournament, hasn't he?
If you could buy stock in, if you can buy stock in Gray sweatpants.
Everyone's so amazed by the pants,
the
right?
Pants.
We've watched him for years, right? We know that he has these pants, but still, it's just fun. He's fun. Look at him. Forget the pants. That is not a guy that should be playing professional soccer at this level, but he is. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Still doing an okay job.
And he can tell the grandkids that, you know, he stopped shots from Cristiano Ronaldo and, you know, is a hero. I couldn't be happier for Hungarian fans. One of my best friends growing up was Hungarian, and I think the reason I love football so much is because of him, because that was my only introduction. He had every magazine I'd never seen before. He had every, as soon as we'd got the internet, he had the package to watch games. And now he's got heroes to talk about, and he doesn't just have to tell everybody about Fenerik Puskás and the days of his grandfather's football. So I'm happy for the Hungarians.
They are, and they're playing really good football as well. I mean, they're one of the minnows that aren't necessarily sticking all those men behind the ball. They're going at teams.
They're
fearless, right? They don't care. They're like, no, man, we are living our dream here. I think they've been brilliant because most people, including myself, thought they were the worst team at Euro entering this thing, and they've been one of the best stories so far. For me, the two moments of Euro so far, you can pick Payet's goal and some of the goals yesterday in the Portugal. For me, it comes down to two moments, and one is Karai putting the ball between his legs and that pass in the first game, like a reverse pass through his legs.
I don't remember.
That and then Yogi Love's sniffing.
Oh, God.
Right.
Had to mention it. You know, this is a lowbrow podcast. We had to mention that.
I thought
Yogi,
you were going
to... What are you thinking, man? Not anything, apparently, according to him. It's just you do things... I don't know.
But after being called out, you know, and being the brunt of every joke back home and the embarrassment of the country, clearly he went and listened to some old podcast of ours and realized rubber shirt is the way to go.
I know.
So he brought that out. Wow. Match day ready and post-match after party ready.
He is a beaut, isn't he? He really is a beaut. Man, how mortifying must that be that he actually had to come out and apologize for it?
Yeah, I can imagine. Did you see John Herdman's reaction when they had played it on the match broadcast and he just couldn't stop laughing. He couldn't analyze it. He couldn't react. He couldn't give a manager's opinion. It was, well, analyze this. And I think the question was just like, aren't you aware that the camera's always on you? And he couldn't even get words out as to why some man would forget that and amazing. Act like that in public.
All you can do now to get over that is win the damn thing, right?
Yeah. Mm.
Then everyone will forget about it. Well, we won't.
Will they?
We'll bring it up a lot in the coming weeks and months and years and decades. All right, boys. So it's been a great tourney so far, as far as I've enjoyed every moment. And I'm the first person to rip into tournaments and matches being boring. I've really enjoyed this so far. I've watched every second of every game. I'm like a mole in my house and then coming here for the last game. But it's been a ton of fun. JMO, keep up the great work, by the way, on sportsnet.ca.
Thank you.
We have got, I don't know how many pieces of content each day, but it's a ton.
Yeah.
It's way up there. And that will continue. Doing well on those 40-second highlights, B.
Thanks very much. You know,
fun embargoes, do the best, and rights restrictions. Fun.
I try and tell quite the story.
Join this at 1-0.
Yeah,
you missed a great goal. It was a great goal.
I didn't see actually how they did the highlights of six goals in Hungary Portugal, but I imagine
missed a couple of goals. But what else can you do? Yeah. You're trapped. Anyway, hope you enjoyed that, guys. Check out Sportsnet.ca for all your Euro coverage. We'll come back at some point, I imagine, before the final. Do one more of these. Do we know when yet?
I don't know. Maybe after the quarterfinal.
Yeah, maybe, yeah. Maybe we'll do that. All right, thanks to Thomas Dobby. Tom, fly safe, and maybe you'll be in studio next time. We speak to you. All right, cheers for listening.